Okay, POL, inspiration from Smultronstället Wild Strawberries. Oh. Actually, one of the better Bergman movies, also. Anyway, so what we can do here. First of all, this movie, as I see it, is then about how someone goes from being kind of, well, noble appearing, but actually selfish and cold towards others. But our guy, well, he gets into that pride when he comes to the big city and earns some respect there, or whether he earns it or not, but he becomes respected. Girls are attracted to him, and but then we show how immature he is, and how selfish he is. And it didn't really just come from him, because yes, we are also product of our environment or our social life. So, you know, he grew up in a culture where, you know, 60s, 50s, 60s in Sweden, where men had a rather exploitative view on women. He heard, you know, that from his teenage friends, you know, classmates, and just go and get out there and get laid, you know. Get one of them down on her back. Yeah, so, you know, the girls there, and you got the bright, kind, innocent ones, lady, and you got the prostitute, and you got him there encountering them and learning. It's like that female goddess sending these representatives, these ladies, to teach him. Yeah. These are heavy lessons sometimes. And that's pretty much his story. And then how it ends, well, stands there one day and says to someone, you know, this story is, that I'm writing is, that was the idea to begin with. a story based on reality or real life, my life. But biographies are boring. And so on. So anyway, make the story contain, I mean, especially in the life of our PO, through his example, how this here, where we are, is a school, is a training ground, is a place of trials and tribulations sometimes, to teach us to find the better part of ourselves, care about others, and so on. And then there he sits with his logic. I mean, he's 22 then, I think, a summer of 77, in his apartment, and he's gone through some stuff. And another level of seriousness of life has opened to him, or is about to open, and he thinks, now what am I going to do with my life? Well, he realizes that selfishness is not the way. And he makes that scientific, logical reasoning there, that if I live just to satisfy myself, my own senses, my own mind, then, well, first of all, there's only so much we can take. There's only so much food we can eat, there's only so much we can do everything that is enjoyable, and then it's not enjoyable anymore. But can even turn into suffering and disease if we get too much of something. So he's kind of learning that. And but then next step in that logical chain is that if I make someone else happy, or others, then there is no limit to how much happiness and enjoyment I can create. And that may sound fine, you know, someone who wants to sound philanthropic and all that, but his logic continued that if I'm then surrounded by friends, because naturally such people like me and want to be my friends, then they will maybe want to make me happy too. So even if I'm selfish, that logic holds up. And if I'm not, then it holds up too. And at that point, well, he had reached that point where that question was lingering in not only his mind, but in others, his friends. If I'm a philanthropist living for others, being unselfish, am I not so, honestly speaking, ultimately because I will gain something on it, by it? Fame,
adoration, people giving back, something that is ultimately selfish. And so we bring up these. This question can be even there pretty much at the backbone of the story, of his storyline, appealed. And because it's a subtle point, actually, because then he comes and he learns from the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam that there is also real, benign, good selfishness. And that is when you know, it's about love thyself, but not that false self. Because that's futile. And then he gets optimistic again. But still, as he's going through this, how to actually be to actually be happy in a way that also satisfies the ethical considerations, you know, of being not selfish and this and that, and not in the wrong way. So he gets it, the solution is there, and he becomes a preacher of that, making radio and magazines and traveling and talking and giving lectures and so on. And making TV, video. Yes, he's a media man. But it's really about living that knowledge, not just having it in your mind and in your head, as some say. Living what you teach is so much harder. So that's his story, that he's, you know, this was a path he's led on to learn by living. And here he is now, old, aging, and has pretty much, well, left it all up to God. Gandhari, Giridhari. Ready for the next lesson, or for being able to joyfully serve them, serve God in this world and all those who live here, and be a nice friend, or whatever, father, lover, or lots of Krishna then. Krishna is a man, and well, that's what he was, and he's maybe going through still, but getting to the point that, well, aging men, when they get somewhat wiser, they generally, well, it's even there in the old teachings. He generally winds down his material affairs, and also realizing that the women affairs are generally, couldn't expect anything else, and maybe shouldn't, pretty much. involving and necessitating material affairs. You've got to be there and be part of someone else's life. And he felt he's too old for that. And he has a mission and he feels the call. And he calls himself a Kshatriya Sannyas. And yes, he's happy because he starts to see that we people who live, wonderful people, and there are plenty of people that he just considers himself a friend of, in whatever way, it's natural, that relationship anyway. So he gets to this point of being fortunate enough to live with a fairly vivid, at least enough to be felt as a reality, awareness of a higher world beyond this one, a nicer one, where most probably, as it seems to him, his some of his old friends are also free from that crazy dream down there, the darkness and the madness, and but on a, of course, they're blessed by Krishna, blessed by the other devotees, and just helping each other and all of us here. And that's how he wants to be too. And that's how he is. And then whether you're still in a physical body and you're looking out through these eyes, or you know, relating to persons here, or relating to friends on a deeper level of existence, so to speak. So that was my next point, inspired by this Ingmar Bergman movie. That the other world, I mean, I already have started to develop it and say that I want to develop it more and more into a very lively, dynamic and beautiful storyline, world in this multiverse of our story. And one thing I now thought of there was this. I think I recall having read people who had near-death experience or out-of-body experiences saying something that when they come to meet their ancestors, their parents and others who have crossed over. It's a very beautiful world, but then somewhere where I also read that it's similar to this world. I don't know, but in any case, we could play with that theme, because I read that Bhuvaloka is so close to Bhurloka, meaning the astral world is so similar to the, so close to this physical world, that the forms we see here, for instance, I keep having this form of my father's family, from grandfather, grandmother on father's side, Sævatorp, where we spent a lot of time as kids. But where now the adults from those years, almost all of them are gone, have moved over to the other side, and I could make, because I keep having that kind of image there, that here they are, and they still live on that surrounding there. It's connected. And there can be all kinds of different versions of that. It could be how some they just stay there as ghosts, because they're still very earthbound in their minds. But some are on a more angelic level, above and beyond, but still it's kind of aligned with the Bhurloka and Bhuvaloka, so that the environment they live in, although just so much brighter and wonderful and enjoyable than on this shadowy version on Earth, looks the same. It's kind of synchronized. So we could make it something like that. I mean, whether this is a fact or not, I read it some places and that's enough. I mean, in wisdom books. And yeah, it's good enough to be put in the POL story. It can be nice, actually, because then, and the reason I got this idea inspired from the Smultronstället movie, Bergman, was that he got some kind of experience like that of his youth. He's an old man, 74 or whatever it is. And then he dreams, and he goes into that same dreamy sphere there, or landscape, or where he is in his old childhood home, I think, and there is his girl there, and how his brother or friend is his competitor there, with a relationship to her, and you know, all these kind of old memories, and how he's been treating people through his life, and women especially. So in that movie, the dreams, the recurring dreams, serve that purpose that we can serve in this story by straight away introducing a multiverse. I think that's a pretty good idea, so thank you very much.